You're listening to Off the Cuff with Chris Nyland, only from Montreal Sports Radio, TSN 690.
Filling in today, Ted Bird. Follow him on Twitter at ManOfBird.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
I think we have the perfect group in the room for this discussion. We're going to talk advanced hockey stats. We've got me, the old guy who remembers when men wore fedoras and women did what they were told. We've got Sean Campbell, who's right in the middle and is probably old enough to appreciate traditional things and young enough to be open to new things. And then we've got Eric Parnas, who is the youngster of the group and is educated in advanced hockey statistics and is here to tell us about Fenwick and Corsi and other things that I haven't quite been able to wrap my head around so far. Where do you want to start, Eric? What's the easiest way to start with explaining advanced hockey stats versus traditional hockey stats?
I think the best place to start is just a quick history of how it all started. Well, I think give people a better idea. The current goalie coach of the Buffalo Sabres, his name is Jim Corsi. He used to be a goalie as well. And when he was playing in Europe at one point, he came up with a way to measure goalkeeper actions, which is basically the number of times that they go down into the butterfly or have to make an action to make a save. And what that essentially means is the number of shot attempts that people are taking. Because if you're a goalie and somebody attempts a shot but it misses the net, the goalie still goes down even though they don't have to make a save. So in order to track how much work a goalie is doing, he thought, you know, I'm going to track shot attempts. And then there was a California engineer named Gabe Desjardins who found this and figured out that shot attempts correlated really well with possession time for teams. And he found that if you could figure out the number of times or the percentage of shot attempts that a team had in a game, you were pretty much figuring out how much possession that team had during the game. So basically, this is where this all started. And obviously we know that, you know, possession's a big part of the game. You don't need to understand advanced stats to understand that. But the NHL no longer tracks possession time in itself. So this was sort of an important way of figuring that out. And that's where this Corsi stat came from. It was named after Jim Corsi, who was obviously the original one who came up with it. And it's now used as sort of the central metric for what people call advanced stats. They're actually not that advanced, to sort of track possession and the flow of a game, which people have figured out is about, I would say, 75% of determining who wins a game.
Right. Well, you hear the expression, too, puck possession teams these days, which is also a relatively new expression. You wouldn't have heard that expression 25 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And, some teams believe in it more than others. Obviously, you have teams like Detroit and Ken Holland, who's been sort of a more vocal advocate of possession. But teams are still trying to figure out exactly how you measure it and what it means to be a possession team. And what people are starting to figure out is that stats like Corsi or like Fenwick, which is basically shot attempts but discounting blocked shots. So what you have is you have shots on net and shots that miss the net. That's what encompasses Fenwick. And what people have found is that Fenwick might actually be better than Corsi because that is highly, it correlates really well to scoring chances, which is basically shots that are within what they call the home plate area, which is sort of in the slot. So what people have found is that when you take stats like Corsi and Fenwick, which are sort of the centers of possession stats, and you look at those, you can sort of tell how good a team is. And it's gotten to the extent where if you go halfway through a season, let's say halfway through 40 games into a season, and you look at a team's Fenwick, or if their Fenwick when the score is close, which people think is the best way of looking at it, that's a better indication of where that team will be at the end of the season than their current record. And some of the examples of that are in 2011, the Minnesota Wild started out as the hottest team in hockey. They were blowing people out. They had a new coach. Everyone was surprised. They've come out of nowhere. Are they for real? You know, a lot of conventional people would have said, you know, their goaltending is doing really well. They're finding ways to win games. They're for real. They're going to go far. But, you know, some of the advanced stats people would have looked at their Fenwick, which was at the bottom of the league, and been like, this team is not for real. They're on a hot streak. They're going to come down to earth. Their shooting percentage is going to regress. maybe their save percentage is going to regress, and they're going to end up as maybe a middle of the pack to below average team. And that's what happened. And sort of the reverse of that is the LA Kings last year, who, after they acquired Jeff Carter, were the number one possession team in the league, but, you know, struggled to make the playoffs, got some bad puck luck. And some of these advanced stats people were willing to say at the beginning of the playoffs, the LA Kings have as good a chance as anyone, if not a better chance, to win the Stanley
this
Cup.
This was when the Kings finished eighth,
yes,
and eventually did win the Stanley Cup.
So those are sort of the two examples that people generally use of, like, showing how this can have predictive effects and how we should look at these type of stats.
Sean, where are you on advanced stats?
I like using them. I like looking at them. You know, when I'm watching a game, I like to look in to see, like you said, the shot attempts. It's not so much, the shots on goal that is the story, because sometimes you have to go and it's like, wow, this team's blocked 25 shots. That means that team shot 25 mm-hmm. times. They took a chance to go to goal. It's almost when I relate it to CFL, I never say, you know, talk about Brandon Whitaker's rushes. I say touches. You know, you want to see how many times. So you have to look beyond. And I think that it is a great indication of how the game's going. Is it the be end and end all? No, the be end end all is the score at the end of the day. And, you know, that's what chalks up wins and losses. So the Corsi, the Fenwick, they're indicators, but they're not, you know, tipping the side. Like, I understand you could look at it halfway through the season and say this team could do well or not do well. But, you know, when it gets in the playoffs, everything kind of changes. And I'm sure the stats indicate that when it comes to playoffs, things seem to mount when it comes to block shots, because everybody's a little willing to sacrifice a little bit more, a little less so when it comes to October and November. When you're getting into, you know, March and April, you'll see those stats start climbing, especially with teams that are in eighth and ninth versus teams that are in first and second. So placing, to me, I think, is something that you need to look into when you're looking at the advanced stats. But I'm open to numbers. I've always been big on numbers. I like crunching numbers. I like looking at numbers and creating something from my own, like looking at a stat, looking at a guy and saying, okay, if I put this together, this is what I got. And, you know, it's interesting what you could come up with. And I know that Jim Corsi, he's been on this station talking about it before. But, he's been all over this.
One of the traditionalist arguments I've heard against advanced stats is that apparently, and maybe you can address this, Eric, because I don't know the specifics, but I've heard that according to his Fenwick, I believe it was his Fenwick, Scott Gomez was a hell of a hockey player for the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, I wouldn't say that it said that he was a hell of a hockey player. I think what it showed
but
was
it overstated his Fenwick overstated his value.
It did to an extent, but I think that a part of that is the fact that Scott Gomez was used in a bad role. He had terrible luck. I think that Scott Gomez was a better hockey player than he showed. And I think you see that if you see him with San Jose, if anybody watched him at all, whether it was in the playoffs or in the regular season. Scott Gomez is still a capable NHLer even now. And I think that in a lot of ways, Scott Gomez was criticized more because of his contract and because of what people have seen from him in the past than anything. I think what the advanced stats showed was that Scott Gomez can still play in the NHL and can still even potentially play on, say, a third-line center role. Because, you know, he's a good puck carrier, he can make plays, but I think what you saw was that the role he was used in for a lot of the time, he was too old for that, and that, you know, people looked at his contract and thought this guy's horrible, when really, if he had the contract he has with the Sharks, people would realize, you know, he's still a serviceable player.
Yeah, but I think that's, you're kind of, I kind of see what you're saying with Scott Gomez, but if you take any player and you put him in an optimal role, okay, you're going to be the third line guy with the San Jose Sharks, when you have Couture and Thornton and Marleau there, you know, you don't need to do so much. There's only a certain amount of roles. It's kind of like, if you're asking me, put Thomas Mechanic in a third line role behind a couple of guys, you don't think that his numbers would shoot up or he would look better. So yeah, you put anybody in an optimal situation, it doesn't matter if you're named Scott Gomez or Thomas Mechanic, your Fenwick will look good. And, you know, but it's what Scott Gomez was brought in to do. And I think that at that point, you're like, well, yeah, he was brought in to do this and he's not doing it. So, but his Fenwick stats are good. Like, you can't do that. I don't think you can do that at all.
One of the best statements I've heard on advanced stats, whether it's in baseball or hockey, and I can't remember who said it. It was somebody who I follow on Twitter, and they said, traditionalists need to be more open to advanced stats, and proponents of advanced stats need to be less condescending towards traditionalists. What do you think? Are you a fan of advanced stats, whether it's in hockey or baseball? Do you believe in it as an accurate measuring stick of a player's value or of how well a team is performing? Or are you more a traditionalist, and do you think that the numbers that have always been used are the ones that provide an accurate measure? Let us know. Give us a call, 514-790-1690, or toll-free if you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. We'll go to the phones when we come back. Sean Campbell has a TSN 690 Sports Center update coming up. He's going to let you know when and where the Habs are going to open the 2013-2014 season. And then we'll be back with your calls on advanced stats, 514-790-1690. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a shout.
Listening to Off the Cuff with Chris Nyland, only from Montreal Sports Radio, TSN 690.
Filling in today, Ted Bird. Follow him on Twitter at ManOfBird.
Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that?
I'm getting jiggy with it, my brothers. How'd you like that, Eric?
Wrong song.
How's my street cred?
I think that song was from about 1999. So
yeah, what's this one here?
This is Miami.
Yeah,
yeah.
Will Smith.
Is it Will Smith?
Yeah.
Well, so Will Smith did getting jiggy with it. I got the right artist.
I'm just saying it was the wrong song. I didn't say it was the wrong artist.
Throw me a bone. Give me some credit.
Summertime. Come on.
More white guys who think they're black. You're just like my kids.
Should have seen me in 1999.
I'll bet. We're talking advanced stats on Off the Cuff on TSN 690. Ted Bird for Knuckles Nylon. The Corsi and the Fenwick in hockey. You've got in baseball the WAR stat, wins above replacement. Can you give us just a quick definition of what that is, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, WAR is a stat, obviously wins above replacement, that we don't really have an equivalent for yet, at least one that people agree upon in hockey. But basically what it does is it tracks how much above a replacement level player a certain player contributes to a team. So it takes everything into account, hitting, pitching, fielding, mm-hmm. base running, whatever it is. And it says, this person, if you replace this person with a replacement level player on a team, how many losses would that team lose over the course of a season?
That is the defining statistic for advocates of advanced stats in the baseball world. What do you think? Are you on board with the advanced stats? Are you more of a traditionalist, or are you somewhere in the middle? We're taking your calls at 514-790-1690. Who have we got, Sean?
We have Brian on line one.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little rattled, though, that we're putting baseball and hockey in the same boat in regards to statistics. I don't think they belong together, and I think that on one hand, in hockey, it provides you with a way to assess the game, whereas in baseball, it's actually driven by statistics.
Right.
So, I mean, at the end of a hockey game, you don't say, Ovechkin was... 1-for-8 shooting with 3 hits and 4 block shots. I mean, in a sense you do, but in baseball, it is literally sums up your game. In hockey, you can score a goal and have a bad game. In baseball, you can go 1-for-3, and if you make all your putouts, you've done your job. So,
at the end of the day, are you a proponent of advanced stats?
Absolutely.
I have to be. Yeah? Why? Why do you have to be? You don't have to do anything.
Well, I think it's important to assess each sport. Guys, sorry about that. I got a signee here.
Yeah.
She's very talkative. She wants to
Are you taking her to the vet?
No, I'm taking her to Point Fortune for the weekend.
No, you got a car. You have a car cat? I've heard of dogs that want to go in the car, not the cat.
Well, she just wants to talk.
Okay. But, anyway, so you're an advanced stat guy. Do you think it gives a more accurate measure?
In baseball, it certainly does. Mm-hmm. In hockey, I think there are more intangibles that come into play. However, with goaltending, I think that because it's about averages, I think that stats are absolutely crucial. And it's obviously what goaltenders are judged by. I'm a goaltender in hockey, and I'm an umpire in baseball, so I'm very familiar with both sports. And I think that as a player in hockey, there are intangibles. You look at a guy like Dustin Brown, who just signed a contract today at roughly $5.8 million a year. And this guy provides so much. He provides leadership. He provides physicality. He provides, goal scoring here and there, sometimes more than not. But he is a valuable player. And then you look at a guy like Grabowski, who one season removed from 28 goals, 28 assists, I think it was, is on the chopping block.
Yeah.
So it's clearly not statistics in hockey, aside from goaltending. In baseball, you look at a guy's ERA, and he's got an ERA under 3, yet his whip, his walks hit per inning pitch, is roughly 1.5. It means that he's letting too many men on base, and that ERA won't stand. It can't stand, and it's proven year in and year out that these are essential statistics in order to rate a player by.
Good call, Brian, and be careful that cat doesn't jump on your head in the middle of your drive. Thanks for calling. That was that was Brian. He made some good points. I think that hockey is a game that certainly well, let me start at the other side. Baseball is a game that is statistic-driven, whereas hockey, I think the measure of a hockey player I think there are more intangibles involved in taking the measure of a hockey player. Who else have we got, Sean?
We have George on line 3.
Yes, George.
Yeah, hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks. You?
Not bad.
I'm
any cats?
No cats. It's at home. I'm all for stats, expanded stats, any stats. Like, two good stats in hockey are save percentage and plus-minus. I don't think we give enough attention to that. I mean, if a guy is scoring 50 goals a year and 80 points, we think he's, like, worth $9 million a year. But if his plus-minus is plus-2, it's useless. You know what I mean?
I mean,
we're still, but we don't care. 80 goal points a year. And he's getting $9 million. It's ridiculous.
Thanks, George. I've heard some people say plus minus is a misleading stat and that people lean too heavily on it.
Yeah, the issue with plus minus is basically that it doesn't really tell you what it thinks it tells you, because people use it as sort of a defensive stat. But the problem with plus minus is that it doesn't really take a lot into account. You know, you have players who will start all their shifts in the defensive zone, mm-hmm. and will take on the Crosbys of the world,
yeah.
and will basically have that role. And they may end up as, say, a -3, and you're like, oh, he's a -3. He can't be good defensively. But then you'll have a guy like a David Desharnais or someone who will be given a sheltered role, who will start in the offensive zone, who's put on there to score goals. And he'll have, say, a +10 and be like, oh, he must be good defensively, or oh, he must be a good hockey player. But really, it's so dependent on the situation the coach puts him in that it's not really telling you what it thinks it tells you. And you have to use other things like zone starts and other considerations to use it successfully.
So is there something in the advanced stats community that is a parallel to plus minus, but considered to be far more accurate?
Well, any of these shot based stats, I mean, all of them you have to use in conjunction with other factors. Like I was mentioning zone starts,
mm-hmm.
which people reference a lot, is basically, you know, the amount of the percentage of your shifts that start in the offensive zone or
right.
defensive zone is a good measure of what kind of role you're used in.
And are those stats kept only in 5-on-5, or are they also used in man advantage or disadvantage situations?
It's both, but generally 5-on-5 is used a lot more because, you know, it's the most frequent situation because, you know, it's a lot less susceptible to other factors. I think that most of these stats are most often used at even strength, but you can find them in power play and penalty kill situations as well. But, you know, you have to keep things like that, take it into consideration. The other thing, reason why people like shot-based stats more is because it's a larger sample size. You have so many shots being taken that you don't have sort of variations. One example is a guy like Brian Bickle, who did so well in the playoffs with scoring mm-hmm. goals, but his shooting percentage was something like 25% at the end of it all. And people will look at that and say, well, Brian Bickle scored, let's say, you know, almost a point a game. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in the playoffs. And people think, oh, he's coming out next year, he's going to be a 70-point guy. That's just not the case, because if you look at a guy, if he's not taking shots, you just can't have that kind of sustainable success throughout a season. It's going to even out. That's just the way it is. The average shooting percentage in the NHL is about 8%. It'll differentiate, you know, some of the better forwards will shoot slightly better. But if a guy's shooting 25%, you know, if you're in fantasy hockey, that's your key to maybe sell on this guy, because it never happens. You never see a guy that'll keep that success throughout the whole year. And one of the things with the shortened season, with a 48-game season, is you had teams that had unsustainable shooting percentages, like the Leafs, like teams like that. And that's why a lot of people think a team like the Leafs, that was one of the worst possession teams in the league this year, still made the playoffs. If it had been a full season, a lot of people think they wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Eric Parnas is our regular advanced stats guru. We got another call, Sean?
Yeah, we have Nick.
Hey, Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Not bad. You?
Good, good. I totally agree with your first caller, Ryan. I mean, he really hit on the nose. I don't have much to say anymore, actually. He pretty much said everything. But, but I mean, you can't really compare, like, baseball stats, especially advanced stats and hockey stats. I mean, baseball stats are so important. I mean, when I watch a baseball game, I got my face on my phone and laptop, and I'm just, like, creating stats. I'm looking at all sorts of statistics for the game, players and such. In hockey, it's not that it's not as important, but you don't score a goal in, let's say, 25 games. You can do things that still contribute to the team that don't show up on the stats, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do love advanced stats, but like Sean said earlier about the whole, like, you know, Scott Gomez and situation like that, I mean, sometimes it's not appropriate for certain situations.
Right. So you're a big baseball fan, Nick?
Yeah, really big baseball fan.
Let me ask you this. I'm old school. Grew up watching baseball in the 60s, 70s, 80s. To me, last year when Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, that to me by default made him the most valuable player. Well, I mean, not just that, but also the fact that his team made the playoffs. But to me, a guy wins a Triple Crown, that pretty much, to me, makes him a given for the MVP. I know the advanced stats people thought that it was that it should have gone to Mike Trout. Where were you on that?
No, I mean, Triple Crown, first of all, it just doesn't happen for me. He's about to win it for a second time.
Yeah.
You know, the series making a run for it, Triple Crown is just pops. I mean, I was so excited. I'm not even a Tigers fan. I was just so excited when, you know, the last few games when he's catching Hamilton and the home runs and RBIs was so close. I was in awe. It's just amazing.
That's cool. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've still got some traditionalist in you, even if you're an advanced stats guy.
Well, I'm not. At the base, I'm a traditionalist. I like certain advanced stats. Like in baseball, like I was saying, baseball, there's all sorts of stats to look at. You can look at stats all day in baseball. But, it depends on every situation, you know.
Thanks for your call, Nick. Have a great weekend.
Ted, I'm kind of curious if you're saying you're kind of old school baseball. Mm-hmm. I just want to know your thoughts on Moneyball.
Moneyball? I watched the movie.
No, but like the whole theory of it.
The theory of it? There's probably somewhere in the middle between using advanced stats and using old-fashioned scouting and instinct and intuition to building a baseball team. I understand that the Oakland A's, I mean, I don't know how accurate the movie was. What I do know is at the end of the movie, they said that the Boston Red Sox, Theo Epstein, used the Billy Ball formula to build a World Series champion. And I thought to myself, well, no, they didn't. They just went out
the roster and money.
And spent a whole bunch of money. And then someone said to me, yes, but they spent the money on the guys who, according to sabermetrics theory, would be the right guys to have to build that championship team. So anyway, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm open, but I'm still I really think that there's still a lot to be said for experience and for intuition when it comes to building a sports team.
And I know
a successful sports team.
I know it was said earlier by one of the callers about, you know, sometimes 50 goals and 30 assists is enough. Yeah, 50 goals right now is enough.
Sometimes
50 goals, no matter what your Fenwick says.
Yeah, I'll take a guy with 50 goals and 30 assists every day. Bird dropping's coming up. You won't want to miss this. It's my hard-hitting commentary on Patchy the Porcupine. Yeah, I'll talk about it, even if nobody else will. Next.
You're listening to Off the Cuff with Chris Nyland, only from Montreal Sports Radio, TSN 690.
Filling in today, Ted Bird. Follow him on Twitter at @ManOfBird.
Now the morning show quietly tolerates bird droppings.
Tut, tut. It looks like rain.
Ted's take on the thick-neck world of sports.
The quest for athletic dignity suffered a crushing setback this week when Patchy the Porcupine was unveiled as the official mascot for the 2015 Pan American and Para Pan Am Games in Toronto. As one of nature's representatives of grace, power, and majesty, the porcupine ranks right up there with the sloth and the blowfish. About the only positive I can find in Patchy is that he at least breaks the predictable Canadian mascot mold of a beaver with a hockey stick or a moose in a Mountie hat. The entire mascot concept has run its course and then some. When London, Ontario native Ted Gianoulis debuted as the San Diego Chicken in the mid-1970s, he not only pioneered a new entertainment genre, Gianoulis embraced the role as a professional and turned the chicken into a brand before brand became an overused word in the business lexicon. Gianoulis put thought and preparation into his public appearances and was actually entertaining, as opposed to the legions of oversized pretenders who careen around ballparks and arenas like escaped mental patients with no apparent rhyme or reason to their so-called antics. I reluctantly include Yuppie in that group, if only because he's never been the same since the Expos left town, and you can almost see the sadness and confusion in his googly eyes as he wanders aimlessly around the Bell Center. If Patchy the Porcupine brings some redeeming entertainment value to the Pan Am Games, I will stand corrected. In the meantime, having a mascot for its own sake serves no purpose beyond scaring small children and blocking your view of the game. I'm Ted Bird, TSN 690.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed.
Take that, Patchy the Porcupine. Come on.
Yuppie does look sad, though.
He does. He doesn't have anything to do at the Bell Center. I mean, at the Expos games, he had little routines, you know, stuff that he would do.
He had a dugout to walk on.
Dugout, yeah. Remember the time Tommy Lasorda went after him?
I do believe.
Yeah. It's a vague memory to me, but I know that Tommy Lasorda, he lost it with Yuppie one time. We were talking advanced stats before. And Mitch Gallo and Eric were talking off the air about whether or not the Red Sox actually used the Moneyball. I called it Billy Ball before. What's the matter with me? The Moneyball theory.
I think that's what it should be called.
Billy Ball?
Yeah. I like it better. It has a better ring to it.
Yeah, Billy Ball was actually Billy Martin. I think that's what they called the style that the teams that Billy Martin managed would play. Anyway. Mitch, you disagree that the Red Sox use that formula.
Well, they use sabermetrics, but they didn't use Moneyball.
Okay, what's the difference?
Is finding players undervalued because of certain statistics and then getting them at a bargain price, which is virtually that Oakland Athletics team that never actually had any postseason success, by the way, but ended up making playoffs against the expectations of
many. Always played over their heads.
Exactly, because they had guys and they're looking at certain statistics, including on base percentage. I was saying the Boston Red Sox, when they won... they had the best designated hitter of all time in David Ortiz, one of the best right-handed hitters of all time, maybe the best, definitely the best of his generation in Manny Ramirez, one of the best pitchers at the time, and a Cy Young Award winner in Pedro Martinez. I mean, if you look at that roster up and down, the Oakland Athletics could have never afforded to get that roster together based on Moneyball. The only Moneyball guy that they had was probably Kevin Youkilis, who in the movie was actually portrayed how much the A's liked Youkilis and would have wanted him on their team.
I mean, they certainly had an advantage based on having so much money and having a great team to begin with. But I think the idea behind it is they used those principles. They didn't have to make as many changes as another team might. But I think the guys that they had worked well under the sabermetrics that they were using, and that's why they didn't have to make a lot of changes. But some of the smaller guys that they brought in, you mentioned obviously Youkilis, but there were some younger guys that they brought in as well to shore up their team that really put them over the top. And you're talking about Oakland not having playoff success. I mean, Billy Beane puts it best. I mean, playoff success in any sport is so much luck that, there's no explanation that you can give in terms of intangibles as to why those Oakland teams can't win in the playoffs. I think it's just they ran into some bad luck.
I don't know if it's luck as opposed to certain players that the scouts are looking for are good in clutch situations. And maybe those guys that the A's don't have. I mean, they might be great statistical players, but can you really base a statistic if you don't have any sample size of seeing someone come up to the plate in certain situations when the blood pressure is elevated or the heart rate is racing at a different level than it would be in a regular season game in the middle of July?
I'd believe it a little bit more if there was a championship banner next to it. That's kind of my theory, and I've always been about the championship.
Felipe says on Twitter, one of these days, advanced stats will simply be called stats. As a natural,
I think
evolution.
That's now, especially in baseball.
That's what I wanted to ask you guys. Do you in mainstream baseball management now are sabermetrics used? Besides Billy Beane, obviously, has that caught on and spread across Major League Baseball where everybody is using sabermetrics now to build their team?
Yeah, absolutely.
But is it a combination of sabermetrics and traditional baseball values as well?
For certain teams, yeah, if they have an extended payroll. Like, I know the New York Yankees really do value advanced statistics now, and something they were a little bit late to the party on, but now they're very much about, and you could see it with some of the additions they made. I mean, bringing in Kevin Youkilis in the offseason to try to replace A-Rod and trying to compare those stats. I mean, I think Billy Beane compared Alex Rodriguez's stats to Eric Chavez. Something along those lines, I believe it was. And if you look at Kevin Youkilis, you can make the same comparison to what he accomplished with the Yankees and bring him in. It didn't work because he got injured, but Yankees would be a team where I think there's a combination of the two, but they're kind of going now more towards sabermetrics, where as in 2006, they brought in Alex Rodriguez from Texas in that massive deal where Alfonso Soriano went the other way. At that time, they were just all about the regular scouts and the traditional baseball scouts, whereas now I think they're kind of morphing into the same.
Yeah, what's interesting is that Billy Beane has had to adapt. Before, it was all about on-base percentage and using that as the undervalued commodities. But now teams have caught on, and what Billy Beane's, he sort of had to pull a 180 and favor things like fielding and high school players and things that if you read Moneyball are the things that he was speaking out against using before because teams have caught up and have now pretty much everyone is using it. So now he's had to find new forms of Moneyball, new ways to find new assets and traits that teams are undervaluing.
How far away are we from stats like Corsi and Fenwick being mainstream in hockey?
Well, I think you're seeing it a little bit. I mean, even on CBC's coverage this playoffs, you saw shot attempts posted at times. I think it's catching on.
Attempts, block shots, they're all posted on the NHL stats now.
Yeah,
like, and I mean, the attempts and blocks are there.
I think,
like you said, I think these stats are stats now. And I think almost every detail of any sport in any game at the professional level, it's being recorded. It may not be mainstream by the NHL or MLB, but the teams are doing them themselves.
What people also need to understand is that stats like Corsi and Fenwick really aren't advanced stats. People call it that because they're new. But when you compare it to things like WAR and baseball, it's a completely different level. That's high-level analytics that hockey really is just starting to breach. But things like Corsi and Fenwick are very simple stats that, you know, in most other sports, we already have things like that, like yards per carry and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a new level when you take it up to something like WAR. And I think that hockey is at least 10 to 15 years behind where we are in baseball, and it's just starting to grow.
Thank you, Eric. Great insights. Much appreciated. Thanks to Sean Campbell. Thanks to Mitchie Gallo for jumping in at the last minute. Thanks to Julian, the intern, sitting quietly in the background, observing all that goes on. And plotting to take over the world. If he doesn't take it over on the weekend, we'll be back on Monday at noon. Sean, you're in for a Marinero next week.
Yeah, we'll talk during the intermission.
All right.
It'll be fun.
See you then. Have a great weekend.